Hi there. It's 15th of May, 2008. Walter Logerman here, and a cyberspace podcast again. This time, I'm calling it Couple Therapy, and it really is a podcast intended for a few Imago trained colleagues. By way of sharing some thoughts and thinking out loud with my friends, but anyone's welcome to listen. Tight structures. We've talked a lot about how there is a very tight structure, and some training has been very tight. And some training has been a little bit more flexible. But I think really there is a very strong Imago philosophy that underlies everything, no matter exactly which way you do it. It's the philosophy that there is an imago, and that an image that we create of our ideal partners and not so ideal partners, and so on, and that the goal of a dialogue is to enable the psyche to emerge. I think an imago is just a description of the psyche, which is such a messy, by its nature, messy. I'm not denigrating it there. That is how it is. Phenomenon that the way it can be expressed is through painting, through art, through drama, through music, and in psychotherapy, that is really the goal of therapy, in my opinion, is to access the psyche. It's beautifully put in that book by Guri Hanif that I read recently. Anyway, I won't go down that sidetrack, but he's just saying, I can't say his name properly. That's why I'm hesitating. I haven't got it in front of me. I'll put it into another one. I'll read from it. It's beautiful. The guy who wrote My Beautiful Lawn Grit, he's written one about psychotherapy. Anyway, for another podcast. But it the idea isn't really to fix problems in a relationship like that. That's why I've called it couple therapy. It's a psychotherapy. I wish we could claim that more fully. And I usually tell the story, to clients. She is upset because he doesn't do enough housework. And they have a discussion, and he agrees to do more housework, and then she feels a bit better. And then 2 weeks later, he's really busy and he's got the flu and she's doing everything again. End of story. However, a dialogue might take a lot longer to get to, a lot longer, but he doesn't do the dishes, and her experience of that is that she's invisible, and that comes out through careful attending, and the invisibility has origins in her childhood life, previous lives, whatever you like. It's been around a long time. Woman's invisibility. It's all those things come up in. With tears, with the heart. And then Then the behavior change dialogue starts to make sense. What can I do to help you with this wound of invisibility? Not the power of invisibility like in the Lord of the Rings, the wound of invisibility. And the answer might be, really see me. How will you know I'm really seeing you? And the answers will, it could well include the dishes again, you see. But not only the dishes, and there may be other things, there may be something like, I want you to, I'm making this up. Take an interest in my the things we talk about, that I talk about with my friends, which are things like music or something. Oh, that, now that is hard. That's hard. That's a big stretch. So then he has to develop the ability to do something totally new that has never really interested in him. And then the next week the dialogue comes on up is, you know, my fear of learning. I was beaten up as a child because I couldn't learn anything new, and the teachers at school were terrible, especially the music teacher. Ah, so there you go. You get into a mutually reciprocal behavior change that leads to some sort of virtuous circle, where if she is able to coach him in a certain way, he can then attend to her in a certain way, and childhood wounds are being healed. Even if the dishes don't always get done, the relationship's getting done. All right, anyway, see, I think there is a tight structure in there, no matter how you do the dialogue, even if you don't do the dialogue at all. So that's the tight structure in the psyche that is being described in the Imago process. It's a bit like Jung talking about the reciprocity of the shadow and the self, and so on, and the ego and the self. I don't know exactly how it works, but you know, what people present to the world is usually the opposite of their shadow that they don't even know about, that's hidden. And now that's a lovely concept, the shadow, and it describes something in the psyche, as does Oedipal complex, as does Freudian slips, you know, words that help us understand this complex dimension, which goes by many names. I like the word sociometric matrix, but I actually mean psyche, and I like the word soul, and I mean psyche. It's all the same to me. Now, someone might not like the way I put that, but that's how I think of it. Okay, in the training that we had in Imago a few years ago now, there was this word called the seamless flow, which was the sort of an encouragement to let one dialogue flow into the other as and when required, which confused me, to be honest, because I had a strong ethos that I wanted the couples to be able to learn to do dialogues at home. And therefore I wanted to teach a simple structure, and maybe two simple structures, but not a seamless flow from one structure to the other. However, I have made a big shift on that. I don't ask or give instructions to people to do homework until they've completed about 12 sessions with me and done a workshop or whatever, and then maybe they can do them at home. But I'm much more engaged as a therapist with the couple. So I've deviated, I think, a little bit from the process that I'm claiming my role as therapist with couple as well as coach. And therefore seamless flow is fine. I can manage that process, and it's not easy to manage that process. Like, I preempt sometimes, like I might say, right, we'll do a dialogue, it's your turn to be the, well, I still stick with turns, I still stick with dialogues, it's not that, but we'll see how we go. It might be a dialogue where he comes up with a behaviour change, or it may not be, or it may take us a few sessions to get to that, and you may do several dialogues to get to that, and we'll explore some childhood relatedness at the same time. So I'll structure things and let them know how I'm thinking, but I can't predict it. And I let them know I can't predict it, so they're in there with me. And so that's one way I'm more of a therapist. And the other thing is, that this is really new since the recent conversation a few of us had about how we often don't stick to a dialogue process or in sessions. And so I like to think that I've had two types of sessions that I've had recently where I think I'm being tight with imago but not tight with dialogue structure. Well, I'm tight with dialogue structure when we do have dialogues, but I do a lot more around getting to the dialogue. And one of the things that worked was, I thought it worked really well, was that this couple is doing hour-long sessions with me. They're not going to be able to afford to come for more than 6 hours, paid for by the family court. And all these details are made up. There's cultural issues. There's, I know that I won't be able to teach them how to do dialogues in those six sessions at home for a variety of reasons. It's partly because of the depth of the pain and the long-standing nature of things, and I think they'll come back, and they could probably come back and do some other work in a year. But I do the dialogues with them, and I listen to them, and then I've got a behavior change request dialogue structure in my head that I work with them each one to one, and I it was sort of at their request, actually, and which I took seriously. They wanted advice. It's gone quite well. I mean, I can do more regular psychotherapy with one person while the other watches, to the point where the deep issue emerges very quickly, because I'm not just giving lead lines for them then to repeat to have them mirrored, which would be very good, but I'm fast tracking something, and so far it's working. I've done this with several of them, so in one session, even the second session, I've got a pretty good idea of the key dynamics and the role structures and the imago match that's sort of throbbing, and I can get right down to the depth of the pain with one person, and then I ask the other one, what's it like to listen in? Oh, I didn't really know that she felt like that. It was so, it's good to hear. I didn't know. I'm sorry to hear that. Empathy is throbbing. So what comes up for you then? I'd like to be able to do something. tell her that. That might be the first time there's a bit of exchange between them. I'd like to be able to help you when you feel that much pain. What can I do? And then I write them down. I mean, 6-7 things come up. And then we work with the smart requests and get them specific and measurable and all those things. And then, so in one session, second session, there's one partner has a behavior written down on the back of a business card that I will, for the next 2 weeks, do X, Y, and Z, da-da-da-da-da, very quick. But they haven't learned the dialogue process. And in the next session, it's like what I described in this earlier part of this talking, the opposite thing can happen. So that then they can, in three sessions, they've got a matching behavior that they're exploring, and I've still got three sessions left with them before the family court funding runs out. I'm pleased with that, but I haven't taught them a dialogue, which I'm not pleased with. I'll be interested to know what people think. And here's another one that I do in this free-flowing style that's emerging, which is not free-flowing, because I want to harp on that, to get back to what I said right at the beginning. I'm not eclectic in this, you know. I really believe in following, you know, many paths lead to the top of the mountain, but to get to the top of the mountain you need to follow one path. And I still think I'm on the Imago track here with what I've just described, and I also think I am with this one. And I wasn't taught this, so maybe people do it anyway, maybe other people do it, maybe I was taught it, I can't really remember. But I will spend, say, in an hour and a half session, I learnt this a while back when a woman came up with her desire, a topic was my desires in this relationship, and she had real trouble talking about feelings, and I thought, well, desires are sort of a feeling. See, this is the other thing I've got. Initially I thought any topic will do, and in a way it will. I mean, I remember a topic, you know, which was the curtains. Okay, and it led to a very heartfelt, deep dialogue about childhood and visibility or something, and the curtains were only an argument they'd had that morning. But here's a new bit that I'm bringing in. When you're the sender, I really emphasize this, you are sending your experience, purely your experience. And I got this from somebody recently. Experience comes through the five senses: see, feel, hear, touch, taste, and whatever they are. Smell. And and then there's inner experience, like sadness and stuff that comes up through your sensations, through your peripatetic system, if that's what it's called. Your juices get flowing and you feel things. Your anger comes up, your adrenaline starts going, ooh. So I feel. When I see or hear or touch or smell, then I feel I. And I coach them not to depart from their experience. So much more coaching of the sender these days to stick with radically stick with experience. For example, I feel rejected. I don't think that's an experience. Well, it is, you know. I mean, I might let it go too, you know. But I'll think now, what's the experience you have? What do you see, feel? What do you see and hear happening? And then what is the experience you have on the inside? Because rejected sort of implies that the other person's doing rejecting, and they might not be. They might be, but they might not be. Ah, what I see is you walk away just when I'm wanting to talk about something that's going on for me. And then I feel angry. Okay, that to me is more like the experience. Another person knows what, you know, the rest is a thought, it's an inference from those, from that primary data. Ah, anyway, so where am I up to? And I find it really helpful, and the dialogues go a lot faster. I'm still on this point about the next way where I do this free-flowing, slightly different approach that I quite like. What is your topic? The topic is yesterday's argument. What was your experience? So it could, that, you know, with a bit of reframing and some work, it can come right down to my irritation at being shouted at or being told I'm wrong or something like that. My being told I'm wrong or shout, yeah, something. It already quite a lot of work gets done and people are listening, and then the request comes. I would like to have a dialogue about that, my experience of anger when I'm, or pain when I'm shouted at. So I think it starts off on a really good footing. The dialogues go deeper, even if it takes a while to get there. So I'm doing some of the work as a therapist to, for them to identify an experience that it's going to work. And that can go even further. I'm just looking at the time here. It's only 22 minutes. 40 minutes is as long as I'm going to go. So they say in the podcast books. So 23 minutes is fine. Well, you're the judge. Where am I up to? So one way would be to work if it's someone's turn to send. I'll work with them for a while to get a good topic. But I can go broader than that. I can work for an hour with a couple where I hear, where I talk to them individually. I say don't talk to each other because they do that in a dialogue. I stick with the dialogue process there. But I'm looking for the dynamics that I think are central. So not only what the topic is, but who is going to be the sender, and so there's a sort of a shared agenda of what is the real core area where they need to go. And I say to them, let's keep going for a bit, and then I'll summarize and make some sort of an assessment, and then you see how that fits with you. And I've been known to say things like, my hunch is that you really are here because you would love to know how to be with your partner when he feels suicidal. I'm making this up. And you don't want him to die, but also you just don't know how to be there with him. And he is carrying a deep, deep despair. And I'd be known to say this from you, how about you tell her about your despair and make that the topic? Because that leads straight in to a behavior change request dialogue, so that she can then write down the requests. How can I help you with it when you feel that? But first of all, it's not for her to say. I mean, you could have a dialogue if it's her turn. I find it really hard to know what to do when you feel suicidal, and then I feel terrible and I feel helpless. What can I do when you feel helpless? I think it's much better for me to frame that session, work with him until you get that clean. Like, his pain is what she wants to deal with. So I think I'm working as a therapist there with my intuition and also with a sense of which dialogue right now is going to be the most productive dialogue to get deeply into the psyche. And that's when the dialogues can go quite fast and quite constructively. So that's the role of the therapist in Imago therapy, as opposed to the role of the coach. I'm talking about the role of a coach too, though, aren't I? And actually, I'll finish on a note for the role of a coach. I'm so... I'm finding it so useful to distinguish thoughts and feelings right from the get-go. It makes me sound pedantic, and it does slow things down initially, And that's sometimes why I don't want to go into dialogues too soon, too quickly, because on exercise issues where they pick something that's not too deep, I want them to go straight to the deep things, but not with thoughts and feelings muddled up. It is such a mess. So that example from before, I feel rejected. No, I'll pause for a moment. Rejected is sort of a feeling. Actually, I don't know what the word is for that. To feel rejected, is that a feeling? But I say it's sort of a feeling. But it's also a sort of a thought. It is a thought disguised as a feeling which says, I think that you are rejecting me. It's a thought that you have going to do something like cast me aside. That's what the feeling is. It's not a feeling, it's a thought. So how about you put it that way? And actually, it's quite bold for them to put it that way. I think that you might be wanting to leave this relationship. And then you feel, then I feel scared, then I feel angry, then I feel sad, then I feel helpless. The feelings come through. So, and there's a whole lot of words like that. Rejected, abandoned, you what, they come up all the time, I can't think of them offhand. They're not strictly feelings. Hurt is even one. I feel hurt. You know, you can reframe that. I think you are punishing me or hurting me. You're wanting me to feel pain. And but I'll let a lot of them go, you know. It's not that, it's hard enough. But boy, it can be very constructive to get the thoughts clarified. It works really well with people who are very cognitive and very, very not so much in touch with their feelings, because then they say, "I feel that you want to do all the parenting without me getting a look in. I feel that you're quite possessive or something," and they're not feeling at all. They've got thoughts. So if they're cognitive, get them to, you know, I get them to reframe that as I think, which makes it, you know, I've already said it, makes it so much more potent. They even want to retract it because I don't really think that. And that's all right too. It helps to get that softening in there, but I don't really think that. Or I don't really believe those thoughts, but I have them anyway, and things like that. They're lead lines that I might throw in. All right, I think we've come to the end of this, these thoughts I've been having, and thanks for listening. Let me know what you think sometime.